This is the current federal tax developments for the week of January the 22nd, 2018. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by the Los Gallos Institute, a Kaplan company, and your state society of CPAs. I'm Ed Zollers. I'm broadcasting here from Phoenix, Arizona, where, hey, it got relatively chilly for Phoenix. We were like down to 40 this morning. So for Phoenix, that's on the cool side. But still, really not a bad place to be in the winter. I'm back here today. I've been working on a lot of the update stuff, working on dealing with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. One of the things you find out very quickly when you do this sort of thing where you write CPE materials for a living is that you discover that a law like this has touched everything. So it's been loads of fun. But in the midst of all this week, we're going to find out that we have an IRS is facing the government shutdown. So we're going to have a little bit of fun looking at that. So let's get started. Take a look at what happened this week. We're going to start out with the IRS's plans for the government shutdown. They actually published those during the week. It's called Fiscal 2018 Lapsed Appropriation Contingency Plan During Filing Season. And as you should be aware, I'm taping this here on Sunday afternoon. It's about 1 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. And as of this point in time, we still have the government shut down. We probably will still have it shut down come Monday and through some or all of next week. So we'll need to take a look at how that impacts things. The IRS published their plan for dealing with this. And actually, the plan deals with what will happen the first 5 days. After 5 days, they reevaluate what they do. They are going to retain more employees now than they did during the 2013 season. A major reason for that, to be totally honest, is the 2013 shutdown occurred toward the end of the year. This one is occurring right as filing season begins to get started. So the IRS has determined that more employees are necessary in order to actually start processing. One of the interesting things is, you know, you need to have employees who are essential. Well, the government defines an essential function as being able to cash checks that are coming to them. So for that reason, returns need to be filed so the money comes in, so that there's checks to cash. So suddenly these employees are more essential this time around because we need them to cash checks. So what that means to a certain extent is the good news is that filing season should still start on the 29th as scheduled. So you'll be able to submit your returns at that point. The IRS will keep accepting returns that are being filed. The bad news is, of course, that a number of services are not going to be available. The IRS phone services basically will shut down. Most of the automated stuff on the web will still be available, but if you actually need to talk to a person, that's not really going to be happening here until this shutdown is over. We also have various things. Chief Counsel's office will mainly, those attorneys will be gone. People that were working on guidance for the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, for the most part, will be gone. So depending on how long this shutdowns last, that could have a complicating effect on getting that guidance out, at least in a timely fashion. But certainly if you are hoping to learn something in the next couple of days about something related to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we didn't learn by the end of last week, don't bet on it real quick. I also noticed, to be honest, that the amount of material coming out of the IRS really dropped off toward the end of the week. It's clear they were getting ready for the shutdown. You know, things were just happening. It's like, tie everything down. Don't get in the middle of anything. And, you know, let things run as they are. One interesting aside, your clients may think, the government's shut down. I don't need to pay that tax amount that's due. No, you do need to pay the amounts due. But on the flip side, as long as the shutdown's in place, the government will not be issuing any refunds. By the way, getting money to them, that's essential. Getting money back to you, not so essential. So that's the way it goes. That's the government theory on what's important and what's not. So you do understand how that works. So in any event, refunds won't be processed. And that could complicate matters for some of your clients. We start looking at, you know, those who might want to file on January 29th. Most often, those who want to file January 29th are expecting a refund. If this drags on, remember in 2013, it dragged on for quite a while. That could have an impact on their refunds. We'll just have to see how long Congress is sitting in this mode with the government shut down. The longer it happens, of course, the more issues will arise. But for right now, probably Monday morning, you won't really notice much initially, unless you have to try to get a hold of the service. And if you do, then you're not getting a hold of them. But otherwise, probably for a lot of us, we won't notice a whole lot's gone different. Now, the IRS did get one important piece of guidance out before the shutdown. This week, last Wednesday, on the 17th of January, they gave us a notice on their website. Now, that's an interesting place to publish this, but that's where they did. A key issue happened in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And that's where the Tax Cut and Jobs Act barred recharacterization of Roth IRA conversions for tax years beginning after December 31st. In this case, though, we had a special thing online where the IRS has clarified on their online frequently asked questions page related to Roth IRAs that, in fact, if you did a 2017 conversion, the question was, the law said it didn't apply for tax years beginning after December 31st, 2017. You couldn't recharacterize a conversion. Now, there are two ways you could read that. Either if you made the conversion, if you made the original conversion in a year after 2017, you couldn't convert it. Or you could say you couldn't do a recharacterization if the tax year had already become the year after December 31st, 2017, or meaning that any recharacterizations from January 1st, 2018 forward would be barred. A lot of brokers, a lot of investment companies, a lot of people in the industry were basically refusing to process recharacterizations in 2018 based on the theory that they didn't know yet whether they could be valid. Well, the IRS website now says they will allow for recharacterization of 2017 conversions all the way through October 15th of 2018. So we're back to our standard routine. So if a client converted their Roth in 17, let's give an example. They, on April the 1st, 2017, converted a million dollar regular IRA to a Roth. They're going to pay tax on $1 million. Well, now we start getting toward October 2018, and that account that was worth $1 million, well, it turns out it was all in Bitcoin, and now it's worth about $100,000. And so, by the way, the Bitcoin bit is a bit tongue-in-cheek, okay? Hopefully you don't have IRA funds in Bitcoin. We'll just keep it at that point. We got a whole lot of problems there. So, but let's say, again, something volatile that went way down by October 2018. What you could do with recharacterization is I can say, oops, I didn't mean to put that in the Roth. I wanted to roll that into another regular IRA. So we'd get rid of the $100,000 taxable income in 17. Then what a lot of people would do, you know, a couple of days later, they would again convert that regular IRA to a Roth, now only paying tax on the $100,000, the value today. Congress, of course, decided that was not good. They didn't like that concept. And that's part of the reason why there's so much uncertainty. You know, Congress saw this as an abuse, shall we say, that they were shutting down. So the question becomes, would the IRS interpret that to mean that you interpret this very narrowly? The good news for us is that's not the way the IRS interpreted this. And I say good news because this had been allowed to go on for a long time. And a lot of people had been aware of this option and had actually planned. So they made their Roth IRA conversions during a year. Their plan was to go an extension, ride it out as far as they could before seeing if they wanted to let that Roth IRA conversion stick by seeing if the account would ever come down significantly below what they had originally converted it at. Since that was a straight planning opportunity, one sense is it would seem very unfair for the government to cut that off midstream, you know, rather than so the people could not have known when they did the conversion, that they wouldn't be allowed to come back in the following year. The bad news is, because there was uncertainty about this, there are some people who did their recharacterizations in 17 because they were concerned they couldn't do them in 18, so they got back out of the deal. Those people may find that, yeah, it works to their disadvantage, that A, they might have discovered that they wouldn't have recharacterized in 18, you know, that they wouldn't have backed off because it wouldn't have gone down, you know, or they may find that, yeah, they do it in 18, and of course, then everything collapses. It's a little interesting as to how that works. But yeah, I could see the problems and people being somewhat upset there. Let's go on to a case now from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. This is the case of Green versus United States, case number 16-6371. The opinion was issued on January 12th of 2018. This is an appeal from an Oklahoma district court. And in fact, this is a case we had talked about before. The Green family, just to refresh you, is the family that owns, you know, the largest part of Hobby Lobby. And, you know, they've been around in court for a couple of issues, you know, related to the Affordable Care Act, but this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with a trust they had. In this case, fundamentally, the answer that's coming for the court, there were a lot of issues in the actual district court case. You go back to our website, we have a link back to the original discussion of the district court decision. There were lots of issues, but one of the key things that happened in this case was that the trust had donated a piece of property that was appreciated to a charity. They had claimed a fair market value deduction for it. That fair market value was way in excess of their basis. Now, if you're used to doing individual returns, you would think, well, that's nothing unusual. You get fair market value for appreciated assets. And true, normally you do. But trusts are subject to somewhat different charitable rules. They are both far more liberal and far more restrictive than you find for individuals. One of the restrictive problems is that the charitable contribution has to be authorized by the trust document, and it has to be paid out of gross income. Now, the district court in Oklahoma, so let's think about this. They have never recognized that gain as income ever anywhere. And it appears that that property would be normally part of corpus. Well, gross income is not the fiduciary concept of income. So we have to kind of work with that. Gross income is a tax concept. So the court, the IRS, everybody quickly agreed in the appeals case that if you purchase that property with gross income, you know, there was income, you bought the property, that property would then become part of gross income. And if you were allowed to contribute it, that would be a contribution from gross income. So that's fine. But the IRS said, wait. Let's say we paid 100 grand for the property. It's now worth $1 million. Well, that property has 100 grand of gross income because that's what we put into it. It doesn't have another 900 grand. Even if we've earned another 900 grand otherwise, we've had over 900 grand of gross income during the time we've had it. We didn't use that gross income to acquire this property. So this is not being paid out of gross income. The district court said, nah, don't worry about that. They went back and found a Supreme Court case that they, as the Court of Appeals would tell us eventually, grossly overinterpreted to believe that you should allow charitables because they were different. You know, they should generally be allowed because Congress wants to encourage them. So we should let you take the increased number. The appeals court said, district court, you overstepped your bounds. In reality, the IRS is correct. Only the amount they paid for it, that is the amount that's in basis, could conceivably have come out of gross income. Therefore, the appeals court found that the deduction was limited to their basis in the property as an amount paid out of gross income, which is a requirement under Internal Revenue Code Section 642 for a trust or estate to claim a charitable contribution deduction. Just can't get there from here otherwise. So because of that, the trust or estate is limited to that amount for the deduction. Okay. It rejected the district court's rather expansive view of what can be allowed to a trust for charitable contribution. A couple of planning issues here, obviously. Number one, recognize that this trust had acquired the property using its own proceeds. Therefore, the answer might be very different if the trust property had been acquired, had been part of what went into the trust to begin with. Number two, what's really important in a lot of cases, not really an issue here, but in most cases, you have to show that the transfer was authorized, that the trust document allows for the trustee to transfer property for a charitable contribution. If that authorization's not there, you don't get the charitable contribution regardless. That one we see often, especially in trusts related to an estate. You know, mom dies, all the assets go to the estate. The kids decide there's a bunch of mom stuff that they really don't want. So they want the charity to don't, they want the trust or the estate. Let's say it went to a revoke, let's say it was revoke living trust. So we have a trust here, but the same be true if it went to the decedent's estate. They want to just have that make the contribution to a charity. And then they want to claim a charitable contribution deduction. Can't do that. Because unless there was a specific authorization to make that contribution, 642 does not allow for the deduction for a charitable contribution unless you have specific authorization. How should they do it in that case? That's pretty simple. If the kids take the property, receive it from the estate, they can then turn around and make a charitable contribution. If they do that, you know, then in fact, the charitable contribution rules work because that's a contribution to their property. It's property that, you know, would be deemed to be long-term capital gain property. The basis anyway is almost certainly going to be equal to its fair value. So you're going to get a much better deal if the kids take the property themselves, and then they're the ones that haul it down to Goodwill or whatever to get the contribution. But nevertheless, the Green case looked great because it looked like trust would be allowed to a lot of things. The key warning here is simple. District court cases that sound too good to be true in taxes almost always are. And this turned out to be no exception. Why is that true? Well, district court judges hear cases on a huge variety of legal issues. The law that's for every type of law. So fortunately or unfortunately, it means they're not biased by thinking in pure tax terms. Well, okay, that's good. But the problem is they also don't have the background or understand, you know, they're not really immersed in the history of a tax provision in the way the tax court or even district courts, because a lot of tax cases get taken up to courts of appeals. So courts of appeals see a lot more tax cases than do district courts. So for those reasons, district courts sometimes come to a conclusion that mainly is a conclusion they arrived at because they're just not as familiar with tax law as are other judges, including the ones that will hear the appeal. And so a too good to be true district court case often gets reversed on appeal. I'm not surprised this one got reversed. It would have been nice if it hadn't, but it was one of those, well, the original case was good, but yeah, it was just too good to be true. Now, some bad news for clients who owe the IRS a lot of money. Notice 2018-1 was issued on January 16th. I guess good news is they can't be doing anything with it here for the next few days, at least. Bad news is when they start, it's going to click in. The Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act of 2015 told the IRS that they were to give a list of taxpayers who had seriously delinquent tax debt. Seriously delinquent generally was you owed them more than $50,000. You'd exhausted all of your appeals rights. Right, we weren't fighting anymore. You'd adjusted rights and collection, so it's due. You owe it. You don't have an installment agreement, or you violated that agreement. The IRS will notify the State Department that those people have seriously delinquent tax debts. When they do so, the State Department, if you have a passport, it's going to be seized the minute you try to get in or out of the country. If you're trying to get in the country, you'll be let in, but then they'll take your passport. Trying to be let out, get out of the country, you're not leaving. They're going to take your passport. If you try to get a passport, they won't allow you to get one. You know, until you resolve this tax debt, the idea is we're going to make it painful. If you have this tax debt, you cannot flee the country. Well, the IRS published guidance on how the program is going to work. And, you know, so notice 2008-18-1, if you have a taxpayer, you do collections work, you've got somebody over 50 grand. And let's say, for instance, their business is one where they often go see suppliers because they're bringing stuff in, they're importing stuff. So they may go overseas, they may go to Mexico, or they may go to Canada to talk with suppliers. Well, they lose their passport, they got a big problem. They can't get over there anymore. So you might want to talk with them about this problem. In essence, if they do have this issue, they may need to try to resolve this issue with the IRS rather than just kind of let it sit out there. Because if they continue to have this excess money due and payable, well, that's a problem. Kind of a major problem. So that's one of the key issues. Other issue, the IRS notes that realistically, if the IRS pulls your passport, the IRS tells state to take your passport, you don't have administrative appeals rights inside the IRS. Because remember, this only happens after you've exhausted your collection appeal rights, you know, after you've exhausted your rights to challenge the underlying tax. So the theory was, per Congress, we're not going to let you go to appeals again because you'll just do that to delay this. You know, it's a delay function. So they're saying, nope, you can't. The IRS discovers that. It just goes to the State Department. You have to get off that list by paying the tax. or you have to get off that list by getting into an installment agreement. You got to do something to get yourself off the list affirmatively. You can't do it otherwise. If the IRS is dead wrong, you do have rights to go to court to challenge it. But of course, while you're in court challenging it, you're still going to have your passport tied up. So that's not necessarily good things for you. So just let you know how that goes. This is one of those. Again, it was put into law in 2015. Everybody talked about it then. We pretty much ignored it since then because the IRS hadn't implemented. This year, they finally implemented. So once the government gets back to functioning, expect us to see these rules actually in play. Once they're in play, don't be surprised that you start getting some panicked individuals, especially those who do business overseas, and suddenly discover that their travel just got shut down because they owe taxes to the IRS, taxes they may have thought they were doing a pretty good job of dodging the collection process. Well, now it's going to be a little nastier. They're not going to be able to get out of the country. That's a problem. If you have, now, by the way, the other interesting part is client doesn't know, you know, has this problem, doesn't normally travel outside the country. If they try to apply for a passport, they will be notified by State Department that, you know, they're not processing their application. They will have 90 days to basically take care of it, or State Department will just, you know, deny the application entirely and send it back. If you need to travel within the 90 days, then the IRS makes clear you basically have 45 days to get your, you know, 45 days, which means 45 days if you're traveling on day 90, to get your taxes paid up or get the installment agreement in place in order for the State Department to start processing, because state will process on an expedited basis 15 days if you pay them, you know, do all the things you have to do to expedite. But the problem is, of course, that 45 days, that 45 days won't start until you get rid of this tax problem, because state won't process the passport application until the tax issue is taken care of. So again, that's an issue. You might want to keep this around, especially if you generally work with collections, you definitely want to keep this around, because eventually you will have a client, you know, somebody coming to you or somebody who calls you out of the blue has this problem. You're going to have to take a look at this notice, because now you're not just working the IRS systems, you're working State Department systems. So we have a couple of things happening. Well, it's been one of those weeks, so it's like, you know, how we've been working on this. So Tax Act presentations, I've actually been doing a few of those. And I know we've gotten lots of questions as we've done those, and I've watched questions go. I was at the Phoenix Tax Workshop yesterday, and we actually had, I wasn't doing the session, somebody else was. But the flood of questions we had, or that they had in that session, dealing with, or trying to just talk about the business items, and realistically, you know, the questions just on qualified business income began, you know, kind of took over the session. So certainly there's still lots of issues and lots of questions about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. I am doing one more full-blown regular session. This is a four-hour session. Last week here, if you're coming to the session here in Phoenix and you didn't already sign up to come for the one live down at the society offices, not happening, because that has been totally sold out. But you still can get on the webcast. So if you want to, we have an option for webcast that'll start at 12:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. You sign up for it through the Arizona Society of CPAs. That's where the sign up is. So don't call me, call them, right? And talk to them for getting ready for it. But we'll be going over the 4 hours over the all the issues of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Should be a little bit nicer. I've done now 1 hour sessions, 2 hour sessions. I'm doing a 4 hour session, and probably, to be honest, 4 hours is enough time to do a decent job on most of the things and actually talk about some examples. So I think it's going to work. For those of you who cannot make this webcast, Pat Garvick, who also lives down here in the Phoenix area, he's going to be doing an 8 hour session for them on February 7th. That'll be going through the whole thing over 8 hours. And again, that one will also be webcast. So we've got those things up and running. Certainly been doing a lot of work here on this issue. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is a major deal. So, you know, if you haven't gotten up to speed on it somewhere, I would strongly suggest you get up to speed on it somewhere, because lots of things are changing. And I think there's still lots of confusion out there about it. The other nice thing is, and this is probably one of the advantages we have, we do live CPE. And of course, I realize I'm kind of tooting my own horn here. And for those of us that do live, but I think it's important to understand one of the major advantages of live is that we can react as things happen right away. When you take self-study, CPE or even taped webinars, those are only good through the day they were written or the date they were taped through. And things are happening awfully quickly and will be over the next year. So I would certainly say at least some of your CPE for this coming year really needs to be live sessions that are keeping up with what exactly is happening, because we expect to have developments on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act coming out consistently over the next year. Now, this brings us to an interesting problem about next week's broadcast. The problem we're going to have with next week's broadcast is if, in fact, the government stays shut down all week, probably won't have tons of developments for obvious reasons, that the service is not going to be issuing any guidance or notices. We will have maybe some court cases because the courts will stay open, but we'll just have to see what's happening. I will find something to talk about next week, even if nothing absolutely happens in terms of taxes, except to say, hey, the government's still shut down. We will talk about something next week, so stay tuned for that. Either we'll get updates like normal, or I'll try to find a topic to talk about to fill in for that time frame. But in any event, be sure to watch for that next week. And also be sure to check out your state society's catalogs for all the CP they're offering. Some states are now finished with their, are mainly finished with their CP catalog for the year, but some other states still have sessions in play. I'm going to be doing sessions all the way through the middle of February, have 2 days coming up in Beaverton, Oregon, that are supposed to be industry focused and will be, one on construction contractors and one on fringe benefits. Obviously, if you're in public accounting, you can take those. They'll work for you too. But you know, it's one of those issues there. Obviously, by that point, a lot of public accounting firms, you're getting into tax season and going. But nevertheless, you know, we still have those going on. And definitely there's still a number of states still have some sort of Tax Cuts and Jobs Act session you could attend. Beware, they are filling up quickly in many locations. So if you want to get one, sign up very quickly. Check your state society catalog for those issues. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments for the week of January 22nd, 2018. You can catch our updates during the week. May not be many this week with the government shutdown, but we'll see what we get at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. We also have any questions or comments. You can send them to me. Ed Zollers at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com is the best way to send them to me. I'm on Twitter at Ed Zollers. You want to follow me there. I also follow discussions on a subreddit on Reddit that I mentioned, which is the Tax Pros subreddit. That'll be found at www.reddit.com/r/taxpros is where you can find that. And I understand it's Reddit, but I also will tell you that Reddit, you know, that there are calm areas of Reddit and there are the wild, wild areas. Tax Pros really isn't a wild, wild area, right? It's a very nice, calm area. Not a huge lot going on there. I hang out there. Also hang out on the Tax Talk group from Yahoo Groups. That is kind of a California Society of CPAs operation. So you can hang out there. If you want to go there, yahoo.com, their groups, Tax Talk, you do have to ask for permission to come in if you are a CPA or attorney at group. So you can ask for permission. And I also hang around for those in Arizona on Arizona's listserv. So if you have any questions, you can find me one of those places. But I look forward to seeing you next week. We will do something next week. But again, we may not have very many developments. So, you know, keep it going. We didn't have a whole lot this week for the simple reason that they were getting ready for the shutdown. But we'll get ourselves ready, try to get things going. And I look forward to seeing you all next week here on Current Federal Tax Developments.